It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
1-2 pitch. Got him swinging. Strike three. And the White Sox, with their first home win to open the season since 2014, an 8-1 win. Southside, stand up.
Hey, thank you guys. A lot more to come. Way to go, dude. Thank you, man.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Good morning, everyone. Hour number two of the first Hit and Run of the full baseball season is underway. It is the 30th of March. Nice full slate of games today. We're not even in April and baseball is flowing and the vibes are good. Let's discuss with Steve Stone, who joins us right now here on The Score on the Circa Sports Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Stoney, good morning. Happy New Year to you. How you doing?
I'm doing good, and it's nice to be on the first Hit and Run of this young season. But there's some pretty good signs right now as far as the White Sox are concerned, and the things we have concerns about have shown a bit in the game yesterday. But, you know, look, it's going to be a little more difficult to score runs than we would like. But the opening game was just magnificent. And I'm not sure when the last time they played two airless games back-to-back. But it's kind of nice to start the season with no miscues.
Well, let's talk about that. If it's a clean and crisp version of baseball, that makes losses in a rebuild a lot more palatable. And so far, so good on that front, don't you think?
Oh, I do. And also, you know, one of your callers called in and said he can't see any talent in the minor leagues. That means one of two things. Either he's not looking or he doesn't know. This is probably a top third organization for talent in the minor leagues. A lot of it is pitching, as you mentioned. Certainly, there's some guys down there that are not that far away from the major leagues. And this is the first time that I've seen catching depth. Now, granted, they were acquired from other places. However, there's some guys who can catch. There's some guys who can hit while they catch. And I think that that part of the Sox rebuild is pretty strong. As far as young arms, you mentioned a couple of them, and I'm pretty sure that Schultz and Smith, we're going to see both of them this year. And that's exciting when you have guys, and they're rated number one and two in the minor leagues as far as left-handed starters are concerned. When you can find that, I think that that the future looks a lot brighter these days than it did. But the present is encouraging because they're going to play a different style of baseball. And talking with Will Venable, he understands that you can't sit back and wait for the ball to leave the ballpark. Granted, that first game, you know, you hit three home runs, that's not going to be the norm. That's going to be the exception. But you're going to have to make things happen. And I think it was pretty nice. The game ended yesterday with Benintendi running at first base on, I guess you'd call it a hit and run, because Vaughn was swinging. He hit the ball very hard, unfortunately hit it right at Newman. But I think that Will understands you have to bunt on occasion. We saw that yesterday from Theis. You have to hit and run on occasion. We haven't seen that quite as much as we probably will. But you're going to have to manufacture some runs with this team. And if the pitching can stay sound, and the one thing for me, the key to this entire season could very well be figuring out the bullpen, especially the back end of the bullpen, who fits where, when are they going to come in, how effective are they going to be, and if Will and Ethan Katz can figure out the bullpen, especially the back end, I think it's going to be a competitive team.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I saw yesterday, every time there was a shot into the dugout, and I'll be interested to get out to the ballpark and try to get a perspective where I can really look into the dugout. I saw coaches talking a lot. I saw like a lot of active conversation. And we know these are smart guys, and it's a mix of influences that Will has brought in. That's what I want to see. Like, you know, if I'm trying to buy into what an organization is doing, I'm looking down at the minors of the players, but I want to look at a really active, thoughtful mix of coaches and see them making changes along the way and thinking the ball game each individual day. And I feel like I'm seeing that already. That gives me a little hope on the big league level.
Well, I think you're going to see a lot more communication from this entire staff. And I know you're going to see a lot more communication as far as the staff and the front office is concerned. I mean, this is a pretty good front office. I know everybody kind of looked askance when Chris Getz was named, but he understood the organization. He had been here. And one of the great things that Chris was able to do was bring in some quality guys as far as that front office is concerned. We've got some pretty smart guys trying to pave the way for the future for this White Sox team. And, you know, Brian Bannister is just a pitching guru. He's just outstanding at what he does. Josh Barfield is exceptional. I think that in the not-too-distant future, I can see the White Sox losing him, because I think it's not going to be too long until he gets a general manager job. But there's some real talent. There's some good evaluators. And I like what they did in spring training. And talking with the players, I mean, I talked with Andrew Vaughn yesterday about what made this spring a little different perhaps than other springs. And he said they worked a lot more situationally. He said they would pose a scenario. Let's say, you know, it's in the ninth inning. You got runners at first and third, and the infield is in. And then they would hit a ground ball. What do you do with it? And they would explain to them what to do before the fact and then watch them try to execute that. And I think they did that a lot this spring. I think they worked on a lot of situational baseball that you're going to run into. But if you haven't ever practiced it, you're probably not going to do it right when the situation comes up. And so, you know, we've got a ways to go, quite obviously. We're not playing the 27 Yankees in the Angels team. But we've played them pretty tough in two games, and that's what you have to do. You have to try and hopefully beat the teams you're supposed to beat, because, you know, when you run into the Dodgers and you run into some of the better teams around, it's going to be very difficult, as the Cubs found out in Japan.
Steve Stone with us here on 670 The Score. You mentioned some of those front office hires. Brian Bannister was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce Levine and David Haugh. There have been, I think it's five different guys who've had to get Tommy John surgery since...
Six.
Is it six now? Goodness.
Yes.
Let's listen together to Brian Bannister on Inside the Clubhouse, and I want to get your thoughts on the proliferation of Tommy John, Steve. Here's Brian yesterday morning.
We audited everything. You know, this was my personal worst spring that I've had in the decade long I've been a coach. And, you know, inevitably the ambulance chasers come out on social media and start looking at mechanics and explain why it happened. You know, LinkedIn, you start getting emails all the time. And it is what it is. It's kind of par for the course, because to win in this game right now, you have to push performance. You have to have pitchers that can get these hitters out who are up there not chasing batting average anymore, but trying to do damage on every swing. And it's just the nature of how the game's evolved. And so we have to have pitchers with good enough stuff to miss bats. But you know there is the elevated risk. It's kind of like redlining the engine on your car. It's probably going to break down a little bit quicker. And so you have to do more preparation on the strength and conditioning side. We have the guys in the lab working on their mechanics. But inevitably, they have to be able to throw pitches that win ball games, and we have to get to that point. So over 40% of the pitchers in the big leagues have had Tommy John surgery, and I hate that stat. But that's where we're at. And so we have to continually develop pitchers and just say, hey, if you have surgery, it's not the end of the world. Many pitchers come back and have great, great careers after surgery. You know, Dylan Cease, Garrett Crochet. You look around the league, I was looking at opening day starters all around the league. Many of them I've had personally, the Nate Evaldis, the Zach Wheelers. They've all had injuries. And so it's not the end of the world. And you just have to keep moving on and keep them motivated and go out and throw your best stuff every single day.
Thoughts on that, Steve Stone, from a philosophical perspective?
Well, I think Brian is really good at what he does. He's been good for a long time. And he came out of a nice pitching background with his father, certainly,
yep.
And a tie to the White Sox. But I think he knows his business. Now, I would say a couple of things about that. Number one, I'm not a big fan of driveline and that philosophy of throwing everything you have as hard as you can each and every pitch. Because the avocation is called pitching. It's not called throwing. And there's two ways to get a hitter out, Spiegs. There is location and there's velocity. If the hitter knows what velocity you're going to throw and you're throwing it about every pitch, let's say your fastball, call it 97. So your fastball is always around 97. Your slider is around 90. And then every fastball and every slider is either 90 or 97. Then you have to get them out strictly by location, which takes 50% of your arsenal away. I would prefer having a guy, he can guess location if he wants to, but then he also has to guess velocity. Well, you take the guess of velocity out of the equation if every pitch is the same speed. Every pitch you throw is the same speed. And so, look, for guys with overwhelming stuff, like Soriano yesterday, he didn't throw many changeups. I mean, he had outstanding stuff. His fastball is among the best in the business. That splitter, that slider combination is just outstanding. So that stuff was miraculous. But on days when you're not enchanted, when you don't have your great stuff, it really helps to be able to change things around. And I go back, and I know I've been around the game a few years, and I remember Bob Gibson in the first, maybe 2-3 innings. You could pull the ball against him. He was throwing 92, 93, maybe occasionally 94. Now he would get the lead late, and all of a sudden, here's 98 and 99. He had it. He just chose not to use it until he really needed it. And quite obviously, it worked very well for him. Now, that was one of the all-time greats, but there's a lot of guys with that same philosophy. And don't forget, you're going to run a lot of guys out there that aren't all-time greats, and they're going to have to use some trickery to get these hitters out. So I'm not a big fan of throw everything as hard as you can every time, because you wind up occasionally with some Tommy Johns. I will agree with Brian in that Tommy John is not the end of the world, and many of these guys, after Tommy John surgery, come back and they have great careers. Sometimes the stuff is even better than it was before the surgery. That part of it's good. It's the second Tommy John, and perhaps in some instances the third, that takes just about everything away from these guys. So I agree with developing as many pitchers as you can, and it used to be the toughest thing to get in this game was pitching and pitching development. But now it's different. You can't find legitimate power very often. And if you find it and you want to trade for it, it costs you a bundle. So the game has changed. We can find some pitchers. We can develop pitchers. But it's trying to find those two, three guys in the middle of your lineup that can hit the ball out of the ballpark and have a game like the Yankees had yesterday when everybody hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it's just such a weird thing around baseball. Like, everybody just thinks about these arms as got to get the most as we can out of them. Oh, they broke down. All right, let's get another one. That's just the way that it is. And I'm with you on wanting to see more pitching variety, but it just doesn't seem to go that way. Okay, look, you mentioned the Yankees and everybody hitting the game, the ball out of the ballpark. What do you make of the new bats that the Yankees have? Apparently, they have an MIT physicist on staff and have changed the distribution of weight of the wood of their bats. There's more barrel on the bat. Why didn't somebody do this first? And it's legal, says MLB, but what are we to make of this development? Here's Steve Stone.
Well, I'm thinking, look, this is, as you know, Speaks, this is very much a copycat league. And if it works someplace, then soon every place is going to use it. Apparently, the Yankees just used it first. And weight distribution is really nice, but bats have changed and the philosophy has changed. When I was a young player, there was a lot of guys used 40-ounce bats. You might remember Dick Allen using a 40-ounce bat. The entire Pittsburgh Pirates team were using 40-ounce bats. And then they started to realize, and perhaps it was some pretty smart mathematical guys that said, you know what, it's not mass through the strike zone that will send the ball a lot further. It's velocity. So how do I get more velocity? You get more velocity by making the bat lighter. You make the bat lighter, you can swing it quicker, you have a lot more velocity coming off the bat. And I remember Billy Williams, maybe the first guy around, he was using a 31-ounce bat. I mean, it was unbelievable at that era because he was playing when all of these guys were using anywhere from 35 to 40-ounce bats. And so there's been certainly revolutionary changes. The maple bat was the first one to come into play, and that's a whole lot harder. Consequently, the ball went, came off the bat a little quicker. But we'll constantly see things like that, and congratulations to the Yankees. If they were the first to identify it, pretty soon everybody will do it.
Yeah, I think that is true. Let's go back to opening day. Sean Burke with six shutout innings, and what'd you see from him that you liked? A very exciting start in a tiny little sample so far for his big league career.
I saw one thing in the first two innings that really gave me hope that he can be the real deal. Now, if you remember when he was drafted originally in the third round, he came up, had a terrific arm, and he was really highly thought of in the organization. And then he had a lat issue, I believe, and that set him back. Now he's fully back. But what I saw in the first two innings was a guy that pitched his way into trouble, and I mean severe trouble, especially early in the game. And then he was able to get out of it in both innings and then seemingly just coasted the other four. And so when you take a look at why that happens to pitchers, and I've talked about this on the broadcast, the pitcher is the only guy that doesn't warm up at the position he's going to occupy when the game starts. If you're a shortstop, you take ground balls at short. The outfield takes balls in the outfield. Hitters, they swing in the batting cage, in the regular batter's box, most of the time, sometime underneath. But a pitcher warms up on a different mound, warms up on the bullpen mound, and as terrific as Roger Bossert is, he's probably as good as anybody around at making both mounds absolutely identical. But there are little differences in every mound. And so when you don't warm up consistently on the place you're going to work, occasionally you have some command issues early. And a lot of pitchers have that. You see the great pitchers I always talk about, if you don't get them early, you're not going to get them. Same thing with sinker ballers, because the sinker gets better as they move along because you get the burn off of adrenaline, you get a little less strength, and suddenly that sinker starts working really well. So what I saw was a guy who could get himself out of a jam and then regroup and coast along for six. I think everybody was really happy he went six innings. I knew they would have been ecstatic to get five, but he only had, I think, 73 pitches. He probably could have gone longer if it was deeper in the season.
So yesterday, Steve Stone, I'm watching you and John Schriffen on CHSN on the app on my phone, And country music was the topic, and I had to bring this back for you here.
Well, you haven't lived until you've seen a live rendition of Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road by Loudon Wainwright III.
So where did you see a live version of Loudon Wainwright III doing Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road,
well,
Steve?
I haven't, personally.
Oh!
But, you know, I told John he needed to do that because you haven't lived until you've seen that. I think there was Dropkick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life.
Sure.
Was another one of those classic country tunes. But I think as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate country a little bit more. Now they've put a whole lot of rock into it, so I kind of enjoy it.
As do millions out there. Steve, thank you so much. Congrats on the season being back, and we'll talk to you. Appreciate you, sir.
Have a great year, Spiegs, and hopefully you have a lot of good things to talk about on the south side of town.
We'll see. Hope so, too. Loudon Wainwright III, unbelievably wonderful musical family. With Martha Wainwright and Rufus Wainwright. Why not a little Loudon? Hey, we got some open phone lines for you. We'll do Team of the Moment this hour. We're going to talk about the reaction in town to some former athletes that came back. But the phone line's back open at 312-644-6767. John Birdie of the Cubs at the top of the hour. It's Hit and Run on the Score.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
A new pitcher into the game is Jalen Beeks, the lefty. So Craig Counsell summons the right-hand hitter, and Shaw puts a charge into one. Left field, back, gone! First big league homer for Matt Shaw. The bench, he jumps on the first pitch as he circles the bases, big smile, and it is 4-1. That has to feel great.
Yeah, come off that bench swinging. big smile.
Great call by Boog Shambi and Jim Deshaies on Marquee last night as Matt Shaw with the first home run. The grin was massive. And they, you know, a lot of times for the first home run, to get the silent treatment in the dugout when you get back there, they did not do that. They did not give him the silent treatment. Just everybody very excited. Good spot in the ball game for that. And it's a pinch hit. And it's going to be an interesting season here for Matt Shaw because expectations are high. This team is in a winning window. Cam Smith made the Astros. and the glare of the spotlight will be bright. Carter Hawkins, the GM, was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday and had this to say about Matt Shaw's confidence and how necessary it will be.
He is confident, and he's confident because he knows he's put the work in. And I think that's the thing that makes us feel really good about Matt. You know, I think with any young player, regardless of the position, there has to be some patience. But you have to understand that that player needs to make adjustments and make adjustments. You got to put work in, and he does it. Did it all through the offseason. He's doing it right now. You know, we feel very confident in that. You know, I think we saw with, you know, Pete last year that there's, you know, a kind of a, you get punched in the face when you go to the big leagues, and how you get back up from that is, you know, really the markings of a great player, and feel like Matt has the ability to do that. Now, obviously, it's only been four games. You know, there's a lot of, you know, established major leaguers. You know, I was looking at the stats this morning, and, you know, Jose Ramirez is struggling pretty significantly. I think he's going to be pretty good over the course of the year.
He lost all that weight. I don't know. I mean, you know.
But, yeah, so, you know, if you look through those things, you realize, hey, look, like, this is obviously, you know, like I said, not even out of the tee box necessarily. So, know that these guys are going to put their work in every day to make the adjustments they need to do, and Matt's at the vanguard of that for sure.
Matt Shaw, the topic there from Carter Hawkins on Inside the Clubhouse. And yeah, there's some guys off to bad starts. You said, look at the stats. Okay, don't mind if I do. Looking at the leaderboard, which is a fun thing we get to do every Sunday morning and think about it. Looking at the leaders in hits around baseball. Shohei Ohtani, I've heard of him. Now, the Dodgers have played extra games. Bo Bichette has 6 hits. Wilyer Abreu of the Red Sox has 6 hits. Jose Altuve in an awkward spot in the outfield, but he's got 5 hits. That's what he does. And then if you look at home runs and RBIs and such, you're bound to find a lot of Yankees. And that's why, folks, they are our team of the moment.
Goldschmidt swings at the first pitch and walks it to left center field and deep. Mitchell back, track, wall, see ya! In 67 games, Bellinger lost one deep to right center. There it goes, into the bleachers, see ya! Back to back, it is 2-0 Yanks.
Bellinger, he checked one of the boxes, always want to get that first home run out of the way.
I mean to tell you,
2 pitches, 2 home runs.
So much for working the count.
You might want to put a wrinkle in one of them. The fastball's not getting by him.
That one's driven deep to left field. There it goes. See ya. Back to back to back. 3-0 Yankees.
It was the team of the moment. Offering entertainment. The team of the moment. They caught our eye.
Hoping and banking on the Yankees being worse than they were last year. Put a bet on the Yankees under in terms of their overall win total. No Gerrit Cole, no Luis Gil in that rotation. The loss of Juan Soto. But Paul Goldschmidt can still hit. Cody Bellinger with the second of 2 home runs to lead off that game yesterday. Cody Bellinger. And then Aaron Judge with the first of his 3 home runs yesterday as the Yankees scored 20 runs. 20. Judge had 3 homers by the 6th and had a chance for a 4th. I believe he doubled off the wall in an at-bat after that. So he almost became the first Yankee to hit 4 home runs in a game since Lou Gehrig. That would have been kind of fun. If you're into the Yankees being good, which I am not, I am begrudgingly giving them team of the moment as they have exploded with offense and they have exploded for 9 home runs yesterday. And we have a situation on our hand because they're using what they call the torpedo bat. Robbie, do we have Michael Kay and the broadcast of the Yankees on television talking about these bats? We don't. Well, look, they moved a lot of wood down towards the label of the bat is what they did because they had done some look on the video and done some look with their analytics department. It seemed that Anthony Volpe was hitting every single ball down on the label of the bat. So they're like, why don't we move more wood down there towards the label so the harder part of the bat actually strikes the ball? Volpe, I think, had one of the homers yesterday. And it's an interesting thing because the bats look different. They look kind of square. Really what it is just there's more barrel on the bat. It extends further down. And you're like, why didn't somebody else do this? Apparently there's an MIT physicist that's on staff for the Yankees. And the only stipulation that MLB has is that the bat can't be longer than 42 inches and it can't be thicker than 2.61 inches. Mace must be made of solid wood and not have a cup at the tip that is deeper than 1 inch. Other than that, you can do whatever you want. And so they've done it. Lenny, the analyst, his name is Aaron Leonhart. He needs to be on the score. Shane, are you listening? You should be on Spiegel and Holmes this week. Aaron Leonhart, Lenny, or Leonhart, whatever, MIT physicist on staff, and they've moved the wood down towards the barrel. This seems to be a good idea. And here's what's interesting. Cody Bellinger is a guy who has a lot of bat control. Cody Bellinger is a dude who, as you know, as you've watched him closely with the Cubs the last 2 years, he will shorten up. He will just do these little half swings. He will go oppo against lefties or with two strikes. And if he's going to be able to know that when he swings, if he gets jammed, he's going to get more of the barrel on the ball to access his power at Yankee Stadium with that short porch and right, then what kind of options does this open up? If you can know with confidence that when you get jammed, you're going to have a lot more power on it. I mean, Bellinger's exit velocity, which has been the bugaboo that has looked bad on his Baseball Savant page for several years now, jumped quite a bit in the spring. Small sample size of the spring with spring baseballs and spring competition, etc. But that is a big jump for Bellinger. So I'm going to be looking at his numbers, his metrics on Baseball Savant in terms of batted ball profile. And if that changes quite a bit with this bat, that will be a little bit of a game changer for me. Very, very interesting. So, yeah, Yankees are the team of the moment with the explosion yesterday, but also with these bats where the conversation is sweeping all through MLB.
Remember when the Cubs traded Cody Bellinger, though, for a bag of balls?
Literally. For Cody Poteet, who they then designated for assignment and now have traded away for cash considerations. And
hey, how's Seiya Suzuki doing? I think Cody would have fit in right. He'd fit in pretty well right in that DH spot.
There's an interesting thing with Seiya Suzuki that we need to talk about as well. And I've known this was coming. I've expressed my concerns with it. I've expressed my concerns about Seiya for a little while now. There's an anxiety factor. There's a human anxiety factor with Seiya that has reared its head in the outfield and occasionally will rear its head at the plate. That is very evident right now. He is lost. He is in between at the plate. The at-bats have looked terrible. And all he has now between at-bats is time to ruminate on said at-bats, as opposed to the welcome distraction of going into the outfield and maybe not having to make a play. When you have to make a play out there, then you can get, you know, things can get hinky out there, and he should not be your defensive right fielder. But without that to take his mind off the at-bats, I wonder if it's going to be a little more difficult for him to snap out of a slump, which it sure does seem like he's in right now. He is a worrisome player for me and a very necessary player for power and slug on this Cubs team. He's a good hitter. He's a very, very capable hitter. Hitting's really hard. It looks bad now. He's had moments where it's looked bad before. I bet he will snap out of it, but I hope it won't take too long. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's talk to Mike in his car on Hit and Run. Phone lines open for you all morning long, folks. 312-644-6767. We are talking baseball and Hit and Run on the score. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Wanted to talk about the reliever situation real quick. This is not a Johnny-come-lately opinion. I called the Saturday morning show over the winter prior to the free agent signing and regarding the bullpen, and I was very much a proponent of either Carlos Acevez or Jeff Hoffman, both former Phillies who ended up with the Royals and the Blue Jays respectively, and very affordable contracts with his music to Ricketts this year. They didn't break the bank by any stretch. But I think the Cubs led with their heart over their head because Hottabee had a relationship, professionally speaking, in the minors where they crossed paths, him and Presley. And Presley's career has been on the decline for over a year. He was blasted in spring training. He's been a disaster so far. It's early. But you don't want to bring a closer in the night crossing your fingers. You want to bring a closer in that you think is a shutdown guy. And they failed to do that at a moderate price that they could have afforded. I think it's shameful, and it's gonna cost them.
Well, if it does, then it will deserve 100% of your consternation. I agree about Carlos Estevez. I was interested in Carlos Estevez. He signed a 2-year contract with the Royals. Let me see what Estevez's number was with the Royals. Hoffman's deal. Estevez is going to make $10.1 million this year and next. And let's see what Jeff Hoffman's contract was. Now, Hoffman has never done the job as a closer. And in Toronto, he signed a 3-year, $33 million deal. The total could go as high as $39 million. Estevez is the one that I was very interested in, and I feel like that would have been a really good signing to add on and pile on. And you could have done it in addition to trading for Presley, but they've traded for Presley and gave up assets, and Porter Hodge is your eighth inning guy, and Merriweather will be your third option out of that bullpen. Yeah, it's a key spot. I'm not ready to write off Presley by any stretch of the imagination because it is early, but lockdown guys are hard to come by that ninth inning. Can't help but notice, though, that the Dodgers went out and got guy after guy after guy. Kirby Yates signed just to be additional gravy there in that bullpen. Tanner Scott is the closer. And these days, you need a big pile of bullpen arms, and the Cubs do feel like they might be one short of veteran killers in that bullpen. 670, the score is where you are. It's Matt Spiegel doing hit and run. Let's talk about fan reaction in town for some homecomings over this past series. And John Birdie from the Cubs will join us at the top of next hour on the score.
Anderson hits it.
Premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
It is indeed Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. Things are good. Cubs won a great game last night. White Sox lost yesterday but won the opener on Thursday. They're 1-1. Cubs have won 2 out of 3 stateside after a bad couple games in Japan. There are box scores to peruse. You're changing your fantasy lineup every morning like it's the middle of the baseball season, because basically it is already. Game on. Here we go. You're watching Quick Pitch late at night or early in the morning on MLB Network, and if you're not, you should be. I mean, there's good things happening in the world because baseball is in full swing. And one of those things is this, the third Hit and Run show. Not the first. It's a lot of misinformation out there about whether this is the first Hit and Run. It's the first Hit and Run of the full season, but Lord knows we appreciate the good wishes no matter what. And we hope that you're doing well out there, everybody. I couldn't help but notice the very disparate reactions to two longtime members of the Chicago White Sox. And I want to talk about it with you as an example of this town's baseball soul. Okay, because Tim Anderson was a member of the White Sox for 8 seasons, played in a total of 895 games for the White Sox. Yoan Moncada was a member of the White Sox for 8 seasons, played in a total of 739 games for the White Sox. They both had long careers before things got bad towards the end of the window when the Tony La Russa year two and that ugliness began, the 2022-3-4. That ugliness, and TA wasn't even here for 24, is here for 22 and 23. So anyway, they both had long ramp-ups as prospects, players, arrivals on some bad Sox team, but the reactions very, very different. TA, by the way, his total wins above replacement as a member of the White Sox, 16.7. Yoan Moncada's 14.5. But you know what they were like in terms of the vibes on the field and off. And listen to the different reaction. You'll hear some of the local broadcast and CHSN. You'll also hear some of Wayne Randazzo, Chicagoan, who knows from the Angels broadcast. This is TA on Thursday.
Well, it's the greatest sport in the world, and we're so happy it's back. And Tim Anderson getting exactly what he deserves from this crowd here in Chicago. A true face of the franchise in his time with the White Sox, trying to revive his career with the Angels.
Tim Anderson, when he came up as a young member of the White Sox, great smile, great attitude, those first several years working with the Sox in the community, embraced the South Side as his own. Really made efforts to connect with the public and was an awful lot of fun. Here's the reaction when Yoan Moncada came to the plate on the South Side.
Look who is pinch hitting at the plate. Former White Sox, Yoan Moncada, makes his first appearance in an Angels uniform.
They are familiar faces.
Not as kind of a reception as Tim Anderson received.
Well, number one, he wasn't here quite as long or near as effective as Tim was.
Or on the field.
Or on the field occasionally, but he's trying to resurrect his career in that Angel uniform.
Tim Anderson got a great ovation from White Sox fans here earlier today, but Yoan Moncada is getting the opposite.
Maybe they were saying, yo.
That could be. That's very optimistic.
Yes.
Ball one to Moncada. It was a different story for Moncada. It was so much was put on him because he was the main attraction in the deal that sent Chris Sale to the Red Sox. It was Moncada and Michael Kopech coming back. But at the time, Moncada was considered one of the best prospects in all of baseball, and everyone thought he was going to be a perennial All-Star. It didn't work out that way, largely because of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, some good context added there by Wayne Randazzo and Mark Gubiza with the hopeful. Maybe they're saying, yo. Yeah, no. Man, I love Chicago sports fans. I do. Moncada definitely had a big pile of who gives a crap in his attitude and sometimes in his game. And you could tell it was there. And T.A. struggled with human frailty in his personal life and did not get better in some of the ways he needed to as a contact hitter in a very difficult game. But T.A. always gave a crap. In this town, we like effort. We like effort. We like passion. And we like what we perceive as honesty. And at heart, that's what we like. And those reactions say a lot to me. It say a lot to me. And you can keep it just to Sox fans if you want, but think about it. You know what you're into, and you know what you're not into. And it's fitting. It's very fitting that those two guys got the reaction that they got. To me, that made all the sense in the world, because as ugly as it was for TA at the end, and as ugly as those teams were for TA at the end, he doesn't have to wear it for the rest of his life as a player and as a public person. He doesn't have to wear the ugliness, the underachievement, the disgust that Sox fans have in their heart for things that went on in 22 and 23 and 24. TA not here for that, but Moncada was. But TA doesn't have to wear it. Moncada does. He does. TA obviously is going to be a guy who could eventually come back here if he wants, do some ambassador stuff, be a part of things. If that's what he wants, I think he'll have an opportunity to do that. And so it just says an awful lot, not just about Sox fans, but about Chicago fans in general. It's Hit and Run here on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel is who you are with. Lots more to get to. You'll hear from Jed Hoyer on the trade that still has a lot of Cub fans thinking and talking. You'll hear a teaser for the PBP. We'll do some Blue Pits all next hour. And we'll start off with the Cubs guest. It is John Birdie who joins us next on Hit and Run on The Score.